You're listening to Cardistry Talk, a podcast that explores the new art form of cardistry. I'm sitting down with notable members of the community to talk about how we can improve our cards, creativity, and community. I'm your host, Caleb Smith. Welcome to the show.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Cardistry Talk. This is episode 67. It's been a while since we've had an upload, but I'm super excited for today's one. Today, I'm joined by Jonathan from P1 Customs, who has made custom trainer decks, as I would call them. We might break down his thoughts on that in a second. But real quick, Jonathan, thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me on.
So I'm super happy to get your thoughts on customs and just that headspace. I know we've had gliders on the podcast before and card painter. So this is going to be another awesome addition to kind of looking into that space from a fresher perspective. So first off, I just want to curious, how did you get the name P1 Customs? How did that kind of become your username?
Yeah, it's actually funny. I actually didn't start making anything cardistry related. P1 Customs actually comes from the term player one, like in video games, stuff like that. And I actually started out making custom Joy-Cons, like Switch controllers and stuff like that, like modding different things, improving them. And it comes from when I was a little kid and my brother would always have like the good controller. And it was like this clear purple N64 controller that I always wanted to play with. But I never could because it was his controller. And so kind of going from there, it's more of a thought of having like a player one mindset. So you get to have the thing that you want to use and it gets to look the way that you want it to look. So that's kind of where that all came from. And it all just snowballed from there to making skateboards and trainers and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool because I had no idea. I'm sure a lot of people that follow you have no idea kind of what the P1 means. And that makes sense from a video game perspective. And I know as being a younger brother, I relate to being player two and having the Mad Cats crappy chunky controller or whatever the leftovers were, the cheap secondary controller. So I think that's a pretty cool name now that you described it. And what you make a lot of what you've been doing is custom trainers or what a lot of people would consider trainers. But you have said that you have an issue with the word trainers. What's kind of your perspective on cardistry trainers as a word?
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know if it will like a little bit of an issue, but it's more of the thought that people will use the term trainers as kind of like a training wheels or like a substitute for decks for cardistry or like a means to practice cardistry super well. I kind of view them more as just like packets. They're like their own thing. Kind of like back in the day when Pocket Park was around, you know, he would always call them squids. They weren't cardistry trainers necessarily. I think that packets are really good for helping you formulate ideas once you kind of have the basics of cardistry down a little bit. It's good to help you practice packet cuts specifically. But as far as cardistry as a whole go, you know, there's so many moves that involve single cards, so many moves that involve aerials and stuff like that that require different kinds of pressure. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily translate as perfectly to resin packets. But I think that they definitely have their own space that they can operate freely in alongside of cardistry. And I think that there's a lot that cardists can use packets or trainers for in order to improve, you know, their own creativity and creating new cuts and stuff like that. Just understanding, you know, how a packet is going to move within a cut and, you know, not having to worry about, you know, perfectly balancing that grip between the things so you can understand the movement and the flow. And then when you translate that to cards, the process can become a little bit faster, in my opinion.
Yeah, I do think it's almost like the best thing to train on for cardistry is usually going to be a deck of playing cards, in my opinion, is using the real thing. But there's like instances, like you say, with packets where one is just fun to feel something different, in my opinion. Like I like getting different finishes of decks, getting decks that weren't made by USPCC. But it's almost like an accessory or like it's a way of doing cardistry with something that's different that can open up different possibilities. Like I almost view it the same way as like an accordion deck or the new deck from Missing with the holes in it, where it's almost like a different way to experience cardistry. That's where I what I really like about trainers from what I've the ones I've have.
Yeah, so yeah, I totally agree. I feel like it's it is its own thing. But I do feel like it is the closest thing to a deck of cards without it being the real thing. And obviously, I don't think that it's ever going to replace a real deck of cards, but I think that there's room for everyone in this really niche art form that we play with. So
Yeah.
yeah.
But plus you have the advantage of it, like you can get them wet and like you don't have to worry about doing 52 pickup. Like there's definitely advantages and disadvantages to both. I don't know what we would substitute for trainers, maybe just customs, if we were to change the name, but I think pretty much everybody would just call them trainers at this point.
Yeah, train is pretty universal. I call them packets just because that's, just in a cut, that's what they are. You get five packets and stuff like that. So, that's what I call them, but everyone calls them something different, which is fine.
Like we've talked about, you've done a lot of custom stuff, but for packets, what was your first experience trying to make a packet, like making your first set of packets?
Yeah. Well, I first actually learned even about packets. Back, almost or maybe even over 10 years ago now. I was just on Instagram and Pocket Park, they were huge. They were making their squids and stuff like that. And I found out that there's actually a bunch of really cool artists that live in my area, which is Portland, Oregon. So guys like Sean O, Chase lived here at the time, Andrew Avila, Lars, all these guys were here and like within a 20-minute drive from me, which was really cool to find out. And I went to a few jams. Got to play with a few squids that Chase would bring, which for me, honestly, I'm admittedly pretty terrible at cardistry. And so it was fun to play with something, that I didn't have to, reach on this like under my chair to pick up every 3 seconds to just do like the most basic sibble or something. And so after that I went home, and I didn't have like resin and stuff, so I actually made like double stick tape packets, just with like 9 to 12 cards each. And I just went from there, and they felt great. They worked, just they were perfect for what I needed them for at the time. And then my first set that I actually made, like in the style that I have now, was back when Cardistry Touch Origin, they launched that deck, and they partnered with Pocket Park. And Chase had to make, those like hundreds of sets of squids that he had to fulfill. And went over to his living room one day, and he had a dining room table with a giant level board on top of it. And we just poured, maybe 50 to 100, sets of squids and stuff like that, which was a really cool experience. Learned a lot from him. So a big shout out to Chase. And really setting the groundwork for a lot of, how that's progressed now.
So you made some of those first packets with Chase and kind of got a feel for it. And I feel like I've seen you a lot more active in the past year or two when it comes
Yeah.
to making custom sets. What have been some of the challenges that you faced while making these sets?
Yeah, so after I made those first few with Chase, I did eventually go home and just, bought, like just whatever resin, just started on my own. And I made my first set, which was like five different color fontaines, starting from blue to slight, so black, pink, and green, and then those navy slight ones. And those turned out really terrible. I think I just used way too cheap of a resin. I didn't know what I was doing. My proportions were probably off. The environment was bad, which these are all things that kind of go into the curing process and like the pouring process and all that. So a lot of people ask for advice about how to make them, and I do wish I could give better advice, but if I'm not there in your environment, it's kind of hard for me to give you pointers like, oh, like this window is too close to where you're pouring and you can't crack this specific window, or if it's too hot, you need like certain ways to cool the room down, or if it's too cold, you need to warm it up, just stuff like that. So really toying with, the process of like, okay, I need like this specific temperature and this specific humidity. So I have a little temperature and a humidity gauge, that I kind of reference to make sure that, the room's in good condition to pour. My packets aren't going to come out cloudy, and it's gonna come out right, essentially. So pretty much the biggest thing would be the quality of the resin, that I use, and just trial and error. It was probably about a year or two of just messing up over and over and over again until I finally got one that, it didn't stick. It felt right. It was even. It was level all the way across and stuff like that. So it's definitely a lot of time that you just need to devote to it in order to make sure that it comes out looking okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting to hear you talk about having like a humidity and temperature gauge and stuff like that. Like measuring that amount of detail, I'm sure is a process, kind of scientific process almost, of like trial and error, to get to where you have it now. What improvements have you felt like you've made to your trainers? I know I've seen you do some things like the glitter. I don't know if other places have done that, but I feel like you're the first time I've seen glitter added.
So this is like just one that I recently made with the new OCs, but I just thought like, hey, like if I'm gonna do something to it, like might as well do some little extra just so it's not just, slapping some resin on top of a card and calling it a day. The biggest improvements I think that I've made have well, just going back to that quality, I think that goes a long way is not using, the cheapest resin you can find on Amazon. The resin that I use is actually it's like food grade. So people use it for countertops, for, making different like plates and stuff like that and whatever. And so it cures super hard and it doesn't stick. And so it takes a lot longer for it to start fading in color at all than your normal resin packets might. Which I think the biggest part of it is that they don't stick, which was my number one gripe about them in the past. You're trying to do a packet cut, and you're trying to break apart this stack of sticky packets, and they won't come apart. And so having something that, slides in almost any temperature outside of it, being like 105 or something, they've been sitting in the sun or something like that. But that is probably the biggest improvement that I made. And then in the recent, year and a half to 2 years that I've been, taking orders and, making them for other people. I've messed a lot with the sanding process. And so making sure that once you pour the card, the edges do come out feeling slightly sharper than you might like, which could be a little bit more uncomfortable. So testing out, hand sanding versus different grit of sandpaper, using power tools, when to use a power tool versus when to not. So that's kind of the, I would say, the other really big change that I've made to my trainers in the past year. Outside of that, just always innovating, just trying to think of what else I can throw inside of a packet, whether it's paste to make it more colorful or different colors on one packet, throwing in dried flowers now and stuff like that, messing with different things like that. I'm thinking about, making glow in the dark stuff, making, cutting out fabric and doing something with that. So just lots of stuff that's in the works that I'm thinking about, and just trying to get over a lot of those challenges that I mentioned before too.
I can definitely see the creativity that you put into some of these decks and trying new things. I know recently you did the whole V deck from Missing, and I thought that was just super cool because I had no clue that that would even be like realistically possible. Like I don't know how that would happen.
These were probably the hardest packet that I've ever made. It's just usually the easy part of the whole thing is the pour, because you're just, you measure it out, you spread it around good, and you just make sure it doesn't leak, and that's like, or it doesn't spill over the side. Like, that's the biggest thing. But when you have something that, is not conducive to just pouring something on there and just letting it run, these took quite a bit of time. And when Missing dropped these, I was like, that's gonna be, I feel like packets are like, these were almost made for packets, because they're, it's like the perfect rigidity, like the mechanic of, putting stuff through and just all that, it stays together. It feels really good. But yeah, it came down to having to actually, I guess I can show you, but what I normally pour using a card with is, 8 ounce, mixing cup that's smooth on the edges. And for Holy's, I had to use this little guy. It's a little 2 ounce medicine cup that I could really precisely pour around the holes while still maintaining the right measurement of resin to come out. And so it's always fun to see new stuff like this because I feel like it pushes Cardistry beyond just like another deck. Of course there's cardists that are pushing it, but when you have new tools to make, it really flexes a new part of your brain that I think is really important for people to explore. So, yeah.
Yeah, this is the type of stuff that I really like am excited about and like
Yeah.
look for is the stuff with like packets and accordions and like holies. Like those are the stuff that I'm like once it comes out, I know I'm buying a couple. I have like so many decks behind me, obviously. Like it takes a lot for me to want to buy something. So when you have like that unique factor of experiencing Cardistry in a different way, I think that is 100% worth money, even if it costs more, especially having seen and been around Cardistry for quite a while now, it feels like. Speaking of the missing kind of deck, what has been some of the like feedback that you've gotten from the community and some of these popular creators? I'm sure Missing reposted those decks.
Both Leo and Nathan were really nice enough to repost a lot of the stuff that I put up on my page. But as far as just the general community goes, I think that the thing that I always try to strive for is pricing. Obviously these are a time consuming thing to make, so I can't make them dirt cheap, but I price them out at $39 for 5 packets. Which I felt was a price that was good for me in my time versus the product that you're getting. I think that the biggest thing for me back in the day when I wanted a set of really cool trainers was the fact that they were so expensive. Some of these packets going for, $80 to over $100 just for 5 packets. And knowing how much goes into it, I definitely understand the reasons behind the cost. And there are definitely packets out there, like the ones that the Carpenter makes, that are just works of art, honestly. The time and effort that she puts into those things is way more than the time and effort that I put into mine, and they're definitely priced correctly. So I would say if you can afford it, like that's a fantastic option to have, like a really cool piece of art to like have as Cardistry trainers for sure. But yeah, when I was talking to as many people as I could, I've helped out with a few Kickstarter projects and stuff like that. But I think that Leo was one of the people that really took time to actually respond to me and was like, hey, like this is cool and stuff like that, and then reposted me. But definitely have gotten great support from all three communities of Cardistry, Magic, and then the collectors community. Seems like there's a little bit of something for everyone. That people have their favorite decks and just want like it is almost like a new fidget toy that people can play with. And so I think that that's really been encouraging to know that there's so many people that are interested in stuff like this. And of course there have been shops and different designers that have reached out and been really supportive. Guys like SoCal and XDecks, they've put in huge orders. Unknown Cards actually just did a drop today of a bunch of sets that I made for him, and so it's not lost on me the amount of support that I've gotten, and really appreciate everyone that's picked up a set or these big retailers that have helped me out too.
Yeah, I think it's great the pricing that you have, like you said, for the amount of work you get in. I know, like I said, I've talked with some other people that have made resin trainers in the past, and like it's a lot of time, and a lot of effort. So I think it's great having multiple like price tiers when it comes to this stuff. Like it's just great to have options. With these collab type things that you've been doing with like SoCal, and Unknown. Have they mostly been coming, reaching out to you? Have you tried like reaching out to other people at all?
A little bit of both, honestly. There's definitely, when you're first getting started, you want to, I mean, no one knows who you are, so you kind of gotta ask, like, hey, is this something that you're interested in? In the case of those two, they had both reached out to me for sure. That was really nice. I think that SoCal found me just through like my hashtag or something like that, and then he followed me and then was like, hey, like I got an extra V1 deck if you want to make some trainers out of it. And I was like, absolutely. With Unknown, kind of the same thing. X decks. I know. I don't know if you guys are familiar, but three decks to get three decks designs. Skylar. how often he does crazy card cuts. He's been making pins and badges lately and just really cool stuff. But ever since he got onto that XDex team, he put my name in, and then I was just in contact with their guys, and we worked out a sweet deal. So yeah, but since then, I've had a few Kickstarters reach out to me. So once those projects get up and running, it'll be exciting to see what I can do for them.
Yeah, I think it's really cool to have like those collector items, like five of these decks or trainers, like stuff like that, where it's kind of feels limited. I know Karsh kind of thrives on the limited aspect of playing cards. Kind of wrapping up the packets slash trainers train of thought, what do you think the future of trainers slash packets could look like, or where would you like to kind of see it go?
I'm just thinking that from my own personal experience and, what I use them for. I'm not a super like my learning curve is kind of slow when it comes to specifically, hand mechanical kind of stuff like that. And so having something that, can speed up that process and my own creativity was really helpful. So if it's done right, I feel like it's a good way for a lot of, entry level cardists that, are trying to learn things, like a skater cut that has like a really awkward pivot for a lot of new people. Things like, different packet cuts where it can be hard to balance those different pressure points. It can really help them learn those moves a little bit faster. And that kind of, that kind of boosts your confidence like it did for me. And then from there, it kind of pushes you to want to learn more things and want to keep, supporting different Cardistry brands and the art form as a whole, and attending events if you're able to, and stuff like that. And so I think that that's kind of where I hope that it goes. I hope that it's, a way that more people will not only get into it, but stay in it as well. Because it's tough when you're trying to learn something and that one move just isn't working, and then you get discouraged and you're like, ah, forget it. I'm just gonna drop this. I only spent $10 on a deck of cards, not a big deal. That kind of thing. And so that's kind of my hope for it. But yeah.
With P1 Customs, you don't only or haven't only just done packets, you've also done, like, you have two skateboards and they're in the back. What have been some of the other things that you've tried to create? And I would like to hear more about the card skateboards for sure.
Yeah, for sure. So I actually started making, publicly I started making skateboards before I started making trainers. I had an extra skateboard lying around, and I had like I just had I think I had like just like a deck of Fontaines that were kind of used up and gross, and I was like, I feel like I can like make something cool out of this. And I remember years ago, I think it was by Playing Card Art, but they made like a smoke and mirrors skateboard type of thing. But I tried to find the image, but it was really hard to find like a good one for it. So I was like, oh, I feel like I can make this. So that actually had quite a few trial and error processes too, but I found a way to finally get them to stick well, lay super flat, and stay that way for a long time. So yeah, I've got a couple Fontaine boards back there. I have an Orbit board. I've made, I think, three boards for people now that have sent in decks and wanted it done a certain way, which that's always really fun. It's good to do something new. And yeah, that's kind of the biggest other thing that I have. But other than that, I do make coasters every now and then with playing card cuts and stuff like that. I make bag tags for luggage tags, backpack keychains and stuff, and things with, the mini orbits that I, can just drill a hole, attach a keychain to it. But it's essentially the same principle as a resin package, just very, very small. And then luggage tags, I just use a full size card and use a TSA approved luggage loop, and you can throw it on, your black suitcase that every single person in the airport has. So that when it comes off the belt, you can just look for the card and you're good to go. So yeah, just always trying to find different ways to keep things interesting. You do the same thing over and over, it can get, annoying, and I don't want this to become annoying. So I'm thankful that it hasn't yet, and always looking for new stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's cool. I like seeing variety in the stuff that you're creating, and like stuff you wouldn't think of. Like I wouldn't think of a luggage card, stuff like that. It's always surprising to see like some of this stuff. Like I know you say three deck design with his pins and stuff, like things you wouldn't necessarily think of. Just seeing them, it's like, oh, that's pretty cool. Another question that I had that I want to make sure to ask because someone asked it in the story that I posted was, what is some of your favorite songs or music to listen to while practicing cardistry?
Yeah, usually as far as like listening to stuff goes, I actually do more like shows, like TV shows, movies, and like streams and stuff like that that I like to watch because normally when I practice cardistry, it's a move that I'm familiar with enough to not have to, like focus in on it like 100%. Usually if I'm learning a new move, I'll throw up a tutorial or I will focus on that just on its own. But when I'm practicing, I kind of just like kind of zone out and go through the motions and try to develop that muscle memory that way. As far as music does go, though, I'm a millennial. I like my pop. Olivia Rodrigo just dropped a new album. It's a good one. But yeah, that's kind of as far as my as far as what I listen to and what I used to focus in on. Because just me as a person, if I I'm one of those people is if I focus too hard, it gets worse. So learning those motions just on my own, kind of subconsciously, I find is the best for my progress, outside of creating a new move specifically.
Jonathan, at the end of the show, I like to do what I call roll out, that is the close-up pad. It's just my fancy way of saying, is there any last note you'd like to leave with the audience or anything you'd like to plug before we kind of wrap things up?
If you're interested in grabbing some trainers, of course, feel free to try to make them your own with however method that you like, whatever really helps you to create and to make things easier for you in this world of cardistry. If not, you know where to find me. You can find me on Instagram at P1 Customs. Just hit me up in the DMs or comment on any of my posts, and I'll make sure that we get you set up with whatever you want. Anything that anyone wants to place an order for, or just wants to talk trainers or wants to try to make your own, I can try to help you guide, give you any advice that I can. I'd be happy to do so. Just love talking about this stuff.
All right. As always, I'll have links to those things in the description if you're on YouTube. If you're listening on podcasts, go to YouTube or look it up. You'll find it pretty easily. Jonathan, thanks again for being on the show and taking your time to talk about trainers and packets and all things custom P1 cards, P1 custom. So,
All right, cool. Thanks, Caleb.
all right. See ya.
See ya.